Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast, all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. Today's guest is former Oklahoma State golfer, Karsten Majors. Karsten and I reminisce about his recruitment and ultimately our time together at OSU. A native of Bixby, Oklahoma, Karsten won the 2009 Oklahoma State High School Championship, among other numerous titles as a junior golfer. For the past 8 years, he has worked with College Golf Fellowship, a really wonderful ministry that I've supported for many years. And he and I discuss all basically a day in the life of a CGF staff member. Great guy. I think you'll love his stories. And it's great to reminisce and actually catch up with Karsten. I hope you enjoy. Okay, everybody. Let's welcome to the podcast former Oklahoma State golfer and one of my former players, Karsten Majors. Karsten, what a real pleasure it is to have you join me today.
Yeah, thank you, Coach. It's an honor.
Been a while since we've seen each other. I think the last time I saw you in person, I think, was Las Vegas. I mean, has it been three or four years? Has it been that long?
Yeah, probably close to that. I think I ran into you at the national championship at the Blessings.
Okay, well that's it. It was that 4 years
ago.
I think I saw you at maybe the coaches' convention that next fall, but I haven't seen you very much. So it's great to just see your smiling face today on a Zoom call. You know, you're building quite a family there for yourself. You and Taylor. I knew about your son Reed and your daughter Charlie, but I wasn't aware. Do you have another on the way? Is that correct?
We do. Yep. We've got another one on the way. We just found out it's a little boy. So having a third kid due the end of July. So my wife's about halfway through her pregnancy right now.
You got to be fired up about that.
We are. Yeah. I was nervous for a third. We had two, Reed and Charlie are 13 months apart. Mm-hmm. And so they've been great and super healthy, but it was a whirlwind for my wife and I having two kids under 13 months.
Yeah. Not really sure how you're doing that.
Yeah. She's done amazing. It's been exhausting. It's felt like a very long few years of life. We've lived a lot of life in the last few years, it feels like, but they're such a joy. And I mean, incredible to have kids. And, so yeah, having a third, I mean, I was nervous for it, but we're at the point where you're so excited and just so looking forward to number three.
Two more, you'll have a college golf team, albeit co-ed, but you'll have a college golf team.
Yeah. So. I think the thought is that we're done.
Okay.
So I think we'll have to hang those dreams up for a co-ed college golf team.
All right. Well.
But who knows?
Let's hope that they're really good golfers and they're great students. They get academic and athletic scholarships and you won't be taxed too much on that end.
Yeah, for sure.
So I met you originally sort of in the recruiting process. And I can remember that pretty vividly. I've got some pretty good stories I want to hash through. Because for one, there was a transfer in there too later, which was also included. But before you ever got into the recruiting process, you were living life. You know, as a young kid, I met you. You lived in Bixby. I don't know where you lived before that, Bixby, Oklahoma. But I know you have an older brother, Dragan, who was a really good player, played at SMU. And tell me about how you guys got into golf and how big an influence was he on your golf?
Yeah. Both my parents picked up golf after they got married. They didn't grow up playing golf. And so just something that they really enjoyed and played all the time. My mom actually became a teaching professional with really no previous golf experience until she was married. So they picked it up. They ran with it. Love golf. My brother is 2.5 years older than I am. And kind of same thing. They just brought him into golf. And so they were playing all the time and just brought him when he was young. And there's great stories of my mom walking and carrying, like pulling a wagon with my brother in it at the golf course. And so when I was born, it just kind of was assumed that I was just going to fall right in line with that. And just add one more to the group. And so I really grew up around golf, and my brother took off with it. He was a great player from early on. I mean, as a junior, he just had great golf swing and was winning a lot of like the, you know, 6-hole tournaments, things like that at the club. And I played with them, but I enjoyed doing other things a lot more. I remember always thinking, man, when I'm old enough to drive, I'm not going to be coming out. It's like, I won't be coming out and playing golf. You know, I played soccer and baseball and ran track and did those other things. And I enjoyed just the fast-paced sports a lot more. But my brother being a couple years older than me, I sort of just looked up to him and everything. And as he got better and better, I wanted to get better and better at golf too, and kind of that competitive edge, but really just kind of looking up to him and just being a part of what our family, I mean, our family being huge into golf. So, once I got into high school, I kind of turned a corner with my golf of, I just all of a sudden started playing a lot better. I think I was decent, but didn't really think much about golf. Got into high school and a lot of things just kind of felt like they clicked. And started getting lessons from Randy Smith down in Dallas. That's who
Good
my
guy to
brother was
go to
playing
right
with.
there. Good
Yeah,
guy.
for sure. And really my game just kind of transformed and played great a lot in just kind of our local area, local tournaments and things like that.
Well, that's when I first noticed you, and I knew you were a good player. And I'm not sure how we arranged it, but you took an official visit to Oklahoma State. And I remember Mike Holder coming by and saying something to you. Well, do you remember anything about that meeting?
I did for sure. Oklahoma State, just growing up in Oklahoma, Oklahoma State just had their Oklahoma State. And so I was incredibly nervous, so excited, just couldn't believe that I was there and, you know, seeing some of the players. And Pablo was in school at that point and was the best player in the country. And so it just felt so surreal getting to be there. And then Coach Holder, you know, introduces himself and he says, "Well, are you any good?" And, you know, I think that my parents, especially my mom, did, she tried to teach us, be humble, you know, about your golf. Like, you don't want to talk about your golf. Like, let what you do kind of speak for itself. And so I had no idea how to answer that question. Don't even know what I said back. I just remember just the fear of like him holding my hand with a tight grip and just saying, "Are you any good?"
You know, that's not, you're not the only prospect he did that with through the years, but I remember he always kind of liked to ask a question to see if he could put the kid off guard, kind of put him back on his heels just to see how he would respond.
Yeah.
He felt like that was an acid test right there. And I thought, well, I do remember him making you pretty nervous. So, and you were nervous to begin with.
Yeah, that was a test, and I don't think I passed that test. I probably was like, "Well, I'm pretty good," I think is probably what I said. And he goes, I think his line was, "You better be a lot better than pretty good if you're here." I was just even more afraid than I already was.
Well, it didn't turn me off at all as far as you as a player, but I was recruiting some pretty good players at the time, and we didn't have a lot to work with. We had a big team, we had a lot going on. So I was really kind of trying to figure out if I could get some guys that might walk on that year in 2009. And I mean, we just didn't have a lot of money available. But eventually you talked me into coming down and watching you play at TPC Craig Ranch in Dallas. And so you kind of had to figure this was a big day. I was actually gonna I'd seen you play in tournaments before. It was not like the first time I'd ever seen you play. But I went down there and that wasn't your best round. And it's like th this was out of the blue clear sky because you had been playing very well before that. Tell me about that day. I remember what I remember, but you probably have a different view of it.
I remember a lot of shank
Yeah.
is the biggest thing that I remember. I remember, I think, playing fine, except for, you know, every third, fourth hole or something, I'd be in the middle of the fairway with a short club and just a cold shank. And you were always around when it happened. I would always look around and like, oh gosh, he saw that one. So I don't know. I don't know where that came from. Didn't feel like I had a history with the shanks or was fighting the shanks. It just came upon me and it got me that round or that tournament. So that was an incredibly humbling and difficult golf tournament for me.
Yeah, I remember that. And your brother, who was at Dallas or at SMU at the time, had come out to watch, and he walked up and he said, "How's my brother playing?" And I go, "Well, he's not playing his best, but and then you hit a shank right after that." Yeah. Oh well. But anyway, so you didn't end up coming to Oklahoma State. You ended up going to UNLV. You got a good offer to go play for Duane Knight. And so I know you spent a year and a half there at UNLV. And I got a call from your brother in, I don't know, November of 2010. And he said, "Coach, I just have a question. What is the process for transfers?" And I said, "Well, we can't talk since you have a brother. I'm not allowed to talk. I can tell you what the rules are, but that's all we can do."
Yeah.
And so I told him, and eventually, I guess he gave you the information about how you go about the process. And then what happened?
Yeah. I was very, at first going to UNLV, I had some other opportunities to stay close around Texas, Oklahoma. And then I had UNLV, which for some reason at that time, I just was excited about getting away. I wanted to go. I wanted to, you know, get out of Oklahoma, get out of this kind of area. And went over there and then got incredibly homesick just being there. And everything about golf was great. Golf courses were incredible. Team was good. And felt like I was actually getting better under just some coaching there and the opportunity to just really play year-round under great conditions. But just felt like there was something missing. The school aspect, the just kind of the experience of being there was beginning to weigh on me pretty heavy and just a lot of homesickness. I went out there not knowing anybody and enjoyed my teammates. But yeah, just got to the point of really desiring to come back to this area, Oklahoma, Texas area. And so I don't remember exactly how it happened, or maybe it was from my brother of just giving me transfer info. But right after Thanksgiving break, I came back to school for a week in between finals, a week before finals, and then I would come home for Christmas break. And just went into Coach Knight's office and asked for a transfer, which he gave to me, and then it was on. I was kind of like, all right, wow, I've got a month to figure out what I'm doing for college and golf and all this. And so transferring then, I didn't really even think about it, but it was a pretty like scary, like up in the air, like, cause you're done. Like when he signed my release, like there was no ability to come back. And you know, play on the golf team there next year if something didn't work out. And so it was really kind of crunch time, and you were the first call that I made. And it just so worked out that you actually were getting on the plane to come to Vegas for the coaches convention. And yeah, we were able to meet up and over the next 2-3 days and just have several meetings, talk quite a bit. And yeah, by the end of that, you giving me the opportunity to come and be in Stillwater in January.
Well, you know, we had a pretty big team already, and it wasn't like I was out searching for other players, but all my guys knew you, and I knew you'd grown up around there and you loved Oklahoma State and all that stuff. So it kind of seemed like a pretty good fit. So
yeah.
I don't have any regrets. I hope you didn't either.
No, not at all. I've got definitely the opposite. Oklahoma State was, I was thinking about it before this call of just you know, kind of thinking about these questions and like what we're going to go over. And really, like coming to Oklahoma State, like my life just totally transformed. There's so much in there. But met my wife at Oklahoma State, got three kids with my wife. We chose to live where we live now so we can be close to Oklahoma State and get there often and go to football games and go be with the team and all this stuff. I mean, when my wife and I get a chance to go on a date, we often go to Stillwater.
That's great.
Just it's so like, it's so special and home for us and so many incredible memories and great friends. So absolutely zero regrets and very much the opposite.
Well, you know, when you got to Stillwater in January, it's not like you got to a place that didn't have very many good players, because I'm just going to mention these names pretty quickly here.
Yeah.
Morgan Hoffman and Peter Uline were there, and Kevin Tway. Those are all first-team All-Americans. Taylor Gooch, who became an All-American, was there. Wyndham Clark, who became an All-American and would go on to win a U.S. Open, he was there. Jordan Niebrugge, who was – I mean, he eventually got on the team the next year when you were there, and Wyndham, Ian Davis, who played the Corn Ferry Tour, Brad Gale, who had PGA Tour Latin America status, Kevin Doherty, who's now playing the PGA Tour. These are all guys that were on the team while you were at Oklahoma State. It's like those guys have all played tours, and
yeah.
So it's not like you came into a spot where you thought, "Oh, this is my spot on the team." You had to earn it. It wasn't going to be easy, right?
Yeah, for sure. I had some confidence for some reason. Such an incredible team, so many great players, but I did have some confidence of like, I thought that if I played well, I could get in there and I could play maybe as a five man, you know, so that's against counsel that I give to high school kids now or kids that are transferring. It's like, go somewhere where you can play. You don't have to play perfect in order to get on the team. You're going to progress as a player, all this stuff. If you can go somewhere where you can get a lot of reps in, it's still a challenge, but you're going to be flying quite a bit.
Well, and I think a big reason, I already had a lot of background information on you as a human, as a person. I knew your family. I mean, it's not like I just took a kid from Southern California who decided he wanted to get in the transfer portal and come to Oklahoma State. It wasn't that at all. So I knew you would fit in beautifully with the players we had. And I knew that there was potential to be a very good player there, too. I might mention the fact, I kind of glossed over this, but, you know, I mentioned Taylor Gooch, who's now, you know, a really great player playing professional golf. Ian Davis, who's gotten his amateur status back, is a wonderful mid-am. But you beat both of those guys in the state high school championship head-to-head your senior year. So you had plenty of talent, you know, if given the right opportunity. But you did jump into a juggernaut, if you will, of great players at the time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was a daunting qualifying felt like the most difficult tournament I'd ever played in my life. playing against them and having to beat them over a series of, you know, four or five plus rounds.
At the easiest golf course in Oklahoma, Carson Creek, right?
Yeah, for someone that doesn't hit it super straight.
you know,
which, yeah, I was plagued with the rights, it seemed like, most of my college career.
Yeah, totally understand.
Hang on.
So I get it. Carson Creek, a bear. We hosted the national championship that spring that you got there. So we had overseeded the roughs. So they were about 4 or 5 inches of overseeded grass. If you were lucky enough to hit it there, if you weren't lucky enough to hit in that 5 inches of overseed, it was in trees and you just reloaded. It was, I mean, it was relentless.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
We hosted the national championship that spring and I felt like we should have won. We had the best team, I thought, and it just didn't happen. But I was walking to Sean Einhouse, the semifinal match against Augusta State. I had watched Taylor Gooch just drub his Augusta State opponent, just 6-5. And so I went, he finished him on 13 green. So I went to back to 12 green to pick up Sean Einhouse's match. And his opponent, as I walked up, his opponent, hold a wedge for an eagle. So I thought, maybe I'm not supposed to be here. But I did walk the rest of the way with Sean. I didn't read any putts, and because he's a beautiful putter and he knew those greens well enough. I was just trying to keep him calm. He gets to the 18th hole and he's got a 20 footer, and the hole was located in a spot I had never seen it in 16 years at Oklahoma State. It was just like, it's not in a tough place, but it was just in a spot I'd never seen this putt. Sean had a 20 footer from behind the hole. You were there in the gallery, right?
I was. Yep. Walking with some of the other guys on the team, specifically member Ian and I, sitting on, there's to the right of 18, there's these, all these rocks buried in the hillside, which kind of makes a cool viewing area of 18 green. And so Ian and I, with everyone else in orange, was crammed into these kind of natural seats right there on the rocks watching this putt.
Well, I'm going to say that I believe it's the loudest roar in the history of college golf, because there were almost 4,000 people.
Yeah.
And when you take the people that were on the hill, the people up at the clubhouse, and then all the way down the fairway. So, and it was an eruption of I've just never heard a college golf roar that loud. So
yeah,
you concur, correct?
I concur. I mean, I was one of them yelling, but even with me yelling and Ian and I doing, you know, who knows, jumping up and down, high-fiving, whatever we were doing, still being so surprised at how loud it was. Yeah, it was amazing. Because I think all the other matches were done. Peter was behind
Morgan,
but I think
was one up. Done. Morgan was one up teeing off on 18.
Okay.
And Kevin Tway was one down walking off 17 tee. And I'll never forget this. Alan told me afterwards, he and Kevin look across the lake walking off 17 tee, and they see Sean standing over this putt, and they stop in their tracks to wait and see him hit this putt. And Alan said it was like the sound just bounced off of the lake and went straight into the eardrums. He said it was deafening.
That was the coolest moment I've been a part of in college golf, for sure. And maybe even like any sporting event, just because it was so personal to me and so fun. Like, it was just my team.
It was exciting. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is whoever was doing the rules really made a mistake, because they had gone to match play for the excitement of things just like that, correct? And right. So Morgan's group is coming off 18T. So all they would have done was just take us back to 18T. They had to wait 5 minutes max, and then they could play the playoff on 18 with all those people there.
Yeah.
We get in that people mover, and they're taking us back, and we go across the bridge on 18. Instead of going right to go to the tee, they went left.
Yeah.
And about 40 people, I guess you were one of them, got to see the playoff.
Yeah. Yeah, moved it to 14, which yeah, I mean, there was really nobody back there. I don't think anybody really knew that's where we were going or they were going. And so just kind of all the momentum felt like it went away, and the crowd didn't really know where to go or what they were following. So, but just, yeah, unfortunate. Sean was right in front of the green in two and just didn't get it up and down to keep it going.
But, yeah, that's all right. It was a great moment. Sean, one of the best putters and chippers I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
One of the tops. He's definitely really good at it. So
that picture is still in the clubhouse.
Is it?
Sean just fist pumping, like walking that putt in.
I think it's one of the coolest. Five. It threw my shoulder out of socket. I've not been the same since. I mean, that was brutal, but it was an exciting time. But so that for was sure. Something that happened during your career. So you had all these great teammates, had lots of fun, guys that were future tour players, that type of thing. But I want you to tell me a story about you and Ian Davis. So our superintendent, Travis Levings at the time, hated armadillos because armadillos would just dig and they're grubbing for worms. And they would ruin fairways, just destroy fairways. And so he kind of gave you an authorization. If you ever wanted to go out with a 22, you could shoot armadillos at night. Take the story from there. He allowed you to do that. What happened?
Yeah, Ian and I hunted quite a bit with some of our other buddies. And so we were always looking to do something like this. This was right up our alley. And we had got the green light to go shoot armadillos at night on the golf course. And you also had a sweet golf cart at the time with big headlights on the top. And so we would come over to your house, borrow the golf cart and take it out. And we'd have a great time just shooting armadillos and just having a lot of fun. So many great memories from doing that, but we ruined it. We didn't see much one night when we were out there. It was pretty slow, and I forget even how it happened, but we were on 17, and those metal cart signs that you stab in the fairway that, you know, direct traffic to the cart path. We decided to take some target practice on those with our 22.
Why not?
And when we finally hit one, it made such a cool sound and kind of echoed, and we were like, oh, that's awesome. So we all wanted to try it and see if we could hit it again and move back further. And so we end up kind of getting lost in this, and we put several holes in some cart signs. And then just not being very smart at 20 years old, or however old we were, we just left, you know, brought your cart back and thanks, coach. You know? And what would have been intelligent would be to take the cart sign, give it to Travis, the superintendent, or give it to you and just say, hey, this is, you know, we're sorry. This is what we did. Shouldn't have done this. But we just played it off like, hey, no big deal. And that was the wrong decision.
Well, I just recall
we had a meeting with you quickly after that.
Yeah, that was not a fun meeting. I had to bench you guys for two tournaments and a bunch of extra workouts. I don't know how many extra Stairmasters there were, but
quite well, a few. We knew it was a big deal when we showed up, I think, for our second or third gauntlet, and you were outside and you said, we're not going to do it today. And I think that was the turn in your golf bags. You're not coming to workouts. You're not going to tournaments. You're not coming to Carson Creek. You're not eating lunch with the team. And so that's when we did. We were in some deep water at that point.
Yeah, I knew we had a good team, but I also knew we just didn't need silly things like that to happen, and they did. So, but you both survived it, so that's good.
Yeah, and honestly, it was probably the best thing that ever happened to Ian Davis.
I think you're right. He did not like not playing in tournaments.
Yeah, he came back and was not the same player after that.
Yeah, he actually became an All-American, so maybe that was just good coaching, or maybe you guys had it planned. But you didn't mention you shot an oak tree. You shot the bark off an oak tree that Travis took a photo of as well. So
yeah.
Anyway, vandalism, not a good thing. And it's in your past, and the statute of limitations is gone, so you're safe. We're good.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, immunity. I remember thinking at the time, like, wow, this is an overreaction for this.
Yes.
But now I think about it and like, yeah, absolutely. What a privilege it was to get to do what we got to do and being trusted with what we got to do out there. And we just totally ruined it. So I do think about it differently than I did in college for sure.
Yeah. Well, kids don't think about that, but I look back on it then and I think about what I try to do now. I'm not trying to be mean person. I'm not trying to be like, I never made a mistake. I made mistakes when I was a kid too, and I still do.
Yeah.
But it's, as a coach, you have an opportunity to teach some life lessons. And here you guys kind of took it for granted that you had different things you could do. And, you know, you kind of want to give kids perspective. Don't take things for granted at all. So
for sure.
So after you finished your career at Oklahoma State, did you try to play professional golf for a bit or not?
I thought about it. I signed up for the Oklahoma Open thinking this would be a good gauge of where I'm at, if pursuing professional golf would be in the cards for me or if I should just move on. And felt like I kind of tried to practice and prepare for that tournament and just really didn't play well. And it was pretty clear after that event that I wasn't going to try and play afterward. College was not very good for me, and golf wise, I never really felt like I got much better. And so I wasn't playing in tournaments. And so just when I did get into summer tournaments or anything like that, I just never felt like I was ready or had some good experience of kind of building on something. And so by the time I got done, I was, yeah, professional golf wasn't really on my radar at all. I would have loved to, but
yeah,
just didn't feel smart. Smart move for me.
So you said you give different advice to young kids nowadays. Like, you probably wouldn't have given the 19-year-old Carson Majors the advice, yeah, go to Oklahoma State. And, you know, you probably would have said, if you're not happy where you are, you need to at least find a place where you're going to be competitive, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I tell that to so many high school kids and kids looking to transfer. You're going to become a better player if you want to play golf, you know, after college. Like, you're going to be better if, doesn't matter where you go, but you have the opportunity to play a lot and be in a lot of tournaments. You're just going to progress doing that.
Yeah, you just mentioned you weren't getting any reps until the summer, and you weren't ready when you got to the summer.
Yeah. My confidence was low from not making tournaments and then going to tournaments and not performing that well and just kind of feeling out of sorts. Like, I was always shaking rust off. So, but I mean, looking back, like, I wouldn't have traded mine for anything. Like, I loved what I got to do, and where I was at. So, yeah, my counsel is for guys wanting to play golf. Yeah, that would be, hey, go be somewhere you can play a lot.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I mean, I think we hear the term things happen for a reason, or, you know, those, yeah, you hear that term, whether that's,
yeah.
But I also think that your life in ministry, and we're going to talk about that right now with College Golf Fellowship, may or may not have happened if you'd end up being a professional golfer. Who knows what would happen?
Yeah.
But you're now in your eighth year with College Golf Fellowship, CGF. First of all, what turned you toward the ministry that way? And then I'll ask some other questions about CGF.
Yeah. A lot of my story has to do with golf and wanting so much approval from other people from golf. I felt like I got a lot of that growing up. In high school, I was able to win people's approval by how I performed on the golf course. And so really my life became centered around that, and golf kind of the object of that. And so, like I said, getting to college and not playing that great, having great teammates, just getting knocked down a bunch of pegs for me. I just didn't feel like I was able to win people's approval with my golf anymore. And so for the first time, I was like, all right, well, where can I get approval from? Where can I get meaning and worth from? And really just ran to a lot of sinful things, things that, I just should not have ever been walking in or trying to find life from, that are just numerous in college, the opportunities to do whatever you want to do. You've got freedom to chase down anything you want to, really. And so I did that, and they always left me more broken and more in search of approval and identity and all this stuff. And so really what I wanted out of golf kept, you know, never delivering on what I was hoping it would. And so end up going to a College Golf Fellowship retreat. And I really think I went because you were involved with College Golf Fellowship. And I think I really thought that if I went, that you would like me more. And when it came time to pick, you know, that fifth spot or an individual, that you'd go, hey, Carson's a great guy. And he came to that College Golf Fellowship retreat, and man, didn't we have fun? Let's bring him. So I definitely had motives in going to this College Golf Fellowship retreat. But that was getting ready to start the school year in 2011 at Paul Stankowski's house in Dallas. And there I heard the gospel, the good news of Jesus, that, man, despite my sin, Jesus has full approval of me because of what he's done, his resume, not mine. And he actually pays for all of my sin when he goes to the cross. And I could be spotless, blameless, cared for, approved of by God the Father by just receiving that free gift. And there was God just in that moment allowed me to actually hear that. I'm sure I'd heard it many times before, But in that moment, I heard it and went, yes, that's what my life is about. So became a believer in Christ August of 2011. And really, like, the entire trajectory of my life changed from that moment, really. I honestly feel like the truth of I went from death to life, at that retreat.
Well, I remember that retreat at Paul Stankowski's, because I went to a lot of those retreats through the years, and I remember you were a different kid after that. And I was your coach for, I guess, the next two seasons before I got let go. And I could tell when I left Oklahoma State, I felt pretty confident you were going to figure this life thing out, and you did. So,
Yeah, it was amazing. I ended up getting a job in Tulsa after graduating. And so I moved to Tulsa and did that for a couple of years. And while I was in Tulsa, I got involved with Young Life. And so I started hanging out with some high school kids and naturally just found the high school golfers and befriended some of them and started doing some ministry with them, Bible studies with them. And that kind of led into spending time with some ORU golfers and doing similar things with them. And pretty quickly after doing that, just in prayers, felt like this is really what I want to be doing. Love the game of golf. Feel like the Lord has allowed me to have just such a story through the game of golf that I could care for guys that are in a similar boat and share the good news of Jesus with them. And so started working for College Golf Fellowship in the spring of 2016. And so, yeah, it's been almost 8, coming up on 8 years.
I can't believe you've been doing it for 8 years. This time has really flown by. We have every Monday or Tuesday, it depends on the semester and our class schedules, but Travis Wolf from College Golf Fellowship comes down from Fort Worth, and he's just wonderful building relationships, developing relationships with kids that are believers and not. But I'm just going to say your life is probably pretty similar to Travis's from that respect, being a staff member of CGF. Tell me about a typical week. What are the universities you see on a regular basis? And what would a campus visit look like when you went to campus?
Yeah, so it seems to change from kind of semester to semester based on just how it's going and kind of some receptiveness. But this semester right now, I go see the OU team on Mondays, and I meet with kind of some guys individually in the morning. So I have breakfast with a guy, and we're kind of walking through something together. And there's a new believer on their team, which is really fun. But we're meeting for coffee after that breakfast. And then I'll go out to the golf course and sit at lunch with the team and the coaches, which is so fun, just getting to feel like I'm a part of their team. So that does not feel like work at all, but it's so fun just getting to know them and just hang with them. And then they will go out and play and practice, and I'll try to be out there with them, either walking alongside them or being at their practice. And Tuesdays, I've been going to see ORU in Tulsa. And that's kind of a newer, recent thing, just from, like I said, team receptiveness. They've got an awesome team, which with some guys that just seem hungry to know more and are welcoming me over there with open arms. So that's been a really fun one to go visit them. They play at Southern Hills on Tuesdays. So that was also a nice perk for me. I love walking around out there with the coaches and watching them play or qualify. And I'll take those guys to dinner and we'll do a Bible study at their indoor facility on Tuesdays. And then Wednesdays, I'll stay here in Edmond. I'll hang out with the UCO team. They practice at Kicking Bird on Wednesdays. And so I'll be out at the year old stomping grounds at Kicking Bird.
Yeah, go Broncos.
Kicking Bird's amazing now. I don't
It
know if you've
is.
been back in a while.
I played it on the grand reopening back on June 28th, and I was shocked. Such a great place.
Yeah. Yeah, they did a great job. So that's Wednesday, Thursday, again, here in town. But I will see Oklahoma Christian. They come out to Oak Tree Country Club. And so I'll get to hang with them at practice and then do a Bible study for them Thursday nights. And then Friday mornings, I get up to Stillwater and see those guys. And usually it's been breakfast has been working well with them after workouts.
Where do they eat breakfast?
There's a new place. It's called Just Wafflin'.
Okay.
Not shortcakes.
No shortcakes anymore?
Or shortcakes. They've asked to go to shortcakes. And so it's on the list.
I'm an absolute legend in shortcakes. I mean, those people would remember my name. You mention my name, you'll get a discount.
Okay. Next. All right. I'm actually going there on Friday. So we'll change it up. We'll go to shortcakes.
All right. Sounds good.
I'll do that.
So the campus visits include watching golf, coffee, breakfast, lunch, dinner, Bible studies. You might do a combination of all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more of mine with having small kids right now. I try to be at home as much as possible at night, just helping with dinner and bedtime. So I would say right now my schedule's looked a little bit different. I try to do a lot more in the morning or during the day and be home as much as possible. Which this job's great. You just have the freedom to really make it however I need to. So.
I've noticed that. But what I've noticed through the years, whether it was Brad Payne and Stephen Bunn when they were a two-man show, 25 years ago, or Travis coming to our campus every week, I just think the staff members at CGF do such a good job of building a relationship with anybody. It could be a believer, a kid who's already walking a faith, following Christ, or it could be somebody who's completely not a believer. And we've had kids who came to college not believing in God that were baptized before they left. And that wasn't because Travis threw a Bible and beat him over the head with it. Just building that relationship is a great way to start.
For sure. Yeah. And honestly, you did that a lot for me in college without me really knowing it. But the way that you cared for me, the way that you treated me, not based on my golf, but just as a human. And then knowing that you were involved with CGF, I joked that it was to say that you might pick me for a tournament, but I think there really was something in there. I think Coach McGraw has life figured out and he's going to this thing. Maybe I should too. And so even you displayed that in a huge way to me, just caring for me.
I'm glad to hear that. And by the way, during that stretch, I was probably my most desperate as a coach in my whole life. I mean, I was horribly, I describe it, all that pressure that I was feeling, that was mostly self-imposed, but there was a lot of external pressure. But yeah. I wasn't handling it well. And I would just take a deep breath about 5 a.m. and ask God to get me through the day. And then I'd let exhale about 10 o'clock and go to bed. It was like, what was I doing? But all the while was trying to pour into guys. I was doing my best. I just wasn't, probably wasn't the best I could be, I don't think at the time, but thank you for saying that.
Yeah. We're always much harder on ourselves than
we are.
Other people are to us.
Are. So that's your weekly schedule, meeting with campuses and players and doing all that. But talk about the CGF retreats at tour players' houses. I want my listeners to hear about this because I think it's one of the most special things that you guys do as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. Our retreats are like nothing else. As a college golfer, the retreats were such an incredible breath of fresh air to be around that many believers, to spend that much time learning from the Bible, from an incredible teacher, and then to see a PGA Tour player who was walking with the Lord, caring for his wife, caring for his kids, being in their home, getting to be in their home was just such a different experience for me of anything I grew up with. And being surrounded by, I'm sure we were all on our best behavior at those retreats, but just being around that many college golfers who were just kind and good guys, fun to be around. What we joked about was different than what we joked about at school. it was just such, CGF does such a good job of creating such an amazing atmosphere for to guys to genuinely have answers and hopefully or have questions, and then hopefully we have answers to for those questions about faith and what it looks like.
Yeah, all these college players are aspiring to become a tour player just like these guys. And now they get to see them as broken men that are walking their faith, loving their families. And they're really human beings. They're not just these machines that go and win golf tournaments. It's like, that's a great perspective grab for those kids too.
Yeah. I remember Ben Crane just opening up at one of these retreats and just telling us the things that he was struggling with and being able to relate so closely to just some of the things I had going on in my heart of where am I getting my identity from, my approval, him talking about him winning on tour 5+ times, and it not satisfying, it not being, you know, what he had dreamt of his whole life. And so there's got to be something more, and a relationship with the Lord is what fulfills and satisfies us. So getting to hear that from someone that you want to be was such a powerful thing for me. And then obviously getting to work just for CGF and doing so many of these retreats in the last 8+ years, getting to provide that experience for current college golfers is such a privilege.
Doesn't feel like work, does it?
It does not at all.
That's great. Work is raising 3 kids. That's work.
Yeah, those are the ones. Those are the nights that I get to sleep in. Nice.
Very nice.
They're so fun. Just the activity, the laughter, is so good.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. You know, on this, I've interviewed right at you're the 189th podcast that I've done, 189 straight Mondays, but a good portion of those have been college golf coaches, either current, past, present, whatever, retired, whatever. So I always ask a question of a golf coach, and that is, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received from somebody you're competing against or some colleague? So I'm going to ask you that same question with a little twist. What's the best piece of advice or something you've taken from a spiritual mentor of yours that has been around you that you take with you every day?
Yeah. I have several spiritual mentors just over the last 12 years, 13 years. But when I first became a believer, I listened to a lot of stuff by Matt Chandler. He's a pastor in the Dallas area. And I remember him saying quite a bit, and it's always stuck with me, kind of asking this question of how many of your sins were future sins when Jesus died on the cross, right? Jesus died roughly 2,000 years before I was born. So every single one of my sins for my entire life was after the cross. Mm. And he still went to the cross. He chose to pay for every single one of them. And so there's been so many moments in my life where I think I should be further along than I am. I think I should be doing better than I am. I think I shouldn't struggle with the thoughts that I have, the sins that I commit. I'm just so reminded of Christ knew about every single one of them for all of my days, and he gladly paid for them. And so there really is no condemnation left for me. Mm. And so really that is something that at least once a day that the Holy Spirit just allows that to pop into my brain, to just remind me that I'm totally under grace, because he chose to be merciful to me. Yeah.
It's praise incredible. God for that.
Yeah.
So that's something that's stayed with you this whole time. Something you remember. I'm sure you've told a bunch of people about it. You mentioned earlier before we got on here that Brad Payne, who's the president of CGF, and he's been around since day one, gives you these little base hits about every time you talk to him. What explain that. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So as far as just ministry goes, it's an overwhelming thing for me if I kind of sit back and go, all right, I'm responsible for 30 college golf teams. They've got 10+ guys on their team and coaches. How do I care for all of these guys and fit it into my schedule? You know, I just get overwhelmed with what I feel like I'm responsible for. And Brad has had so many incredible just wisdom nuggets along the way. But what he said as far as that is, it's just about getting a base hit with guys. You don't have to do everything in one day. You don't have to, you know, accomplish everything on your to-do list for the year. It's just, hey, a base hit, be faithful, show up, and just keep going and just trust the Lord with the results. So when I do get overwhelmed, which is often, I just remember that of like, hey, we're just going to go and try to have a base hit today with this one person I'm having coffee with or this one team visit. And then we're just going to wake up and do it again tomorrow.
You know, it just occurred to me when you said it that way, that that's what coaches have to do. We think we have to figure out everything about this kid's golf game and his life and his, you know, everything about it from the start. But we don't. I just need to hit on one little thing today that might help this young man further down the highway.
For sure.
Great advice. Great advice.
Yeah,
okay. Absolutely. Before we finish, I'm going to do something with you. I do every few episodes of this podcast, and that is a speed round. I haven't prepared you for this.
All right.
I think you're a pretty sharp kid. You'll probably do just fine here.
Okay, we're about to find out.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. How'd you get your first name, Carson? Are you named after Carson Solheim? Where did that come from?
Yeah, my mom saw the name on the back of my dad's golf clubs in 1990 and liked the name and said, all right, we're going to go with that.
Okay. You need to get in that family. They've done very well for themselves out there. You know, maybe you should go out there and talk to them. Actually, they are a very wonderful, faith-driven family. I can tell you that. So,
yeah, for sure.
How many holes in one have you made?
Just one.
Just the one. Huh? I've only had
the one. You're a legend, though.
No, I made one on. No, I'm truly not. But anyway, and by the way, your chances of making more hole in ones in the future are much greater than mine. I'm just not playing enough.
Yeah, number 17 at the Golf Club of Oklahoma.
Wow, that's a great. That was probably a 9-iron back left pin.
It was a 7-iron to a back left pin.
Okay, all right. I remember that hole very well. Something about you that no one outside of golf knows about you.
No one outside of golf?
Interesting.
Oh, man.
Interesting tidbit.
An interesting tidbit.
Speed round.
All right. Yeah. Sorry. I'm going slow here. This is not allowed. I actually just got a record player for my birthday this last year.
So you have the actual records?
I do. So I got a turntable for my birthday, and I've just been collecting old records and some new stuff too. I mean, everyone who has a record player will probably say this. It sounds better. There's just something about
100%, way better than that pure sound they're listening to today. It's got that little crackling sound behind it. It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I didn't know about that about you, so I like that. Favorite pro sports team?
The Dallas Cowboys.
Okay. You could be a pro athlete. What would you be? Not a golfer. Can't be a golfer.
I play football.
Okay. Wide receiver. You had foot speed. Yeah. You had foot
speed.
Chick-fil-A or Chipotle?
Chipotle.
George Strait or Morgan Wallen?
Oof.
That's not even a question.
I feel like I should say George Strait, but Morgan Wallen, George Strait's the king. You really can't compare.
My guys on the team will be glad you said Morgan Wallen. I'm a little disappointed. I'll have to talk to you about that afterwards.
Yeah.
He is the king. Favorite PGA Tour player?
I really like Cam Young.
Good one.
Yeah.
Favorite Coach McGraw quirk?
Bone on white is a great one.
Wow.
Or before qualifying, you would have a stand on your stomach. Tell us, look how strong I am.
Well, I couldn't hang my hat on much golf at that time. It was abs, I guess. Okay. Final question. Your dream foursome, you and three others, who are they going to be?
Oh, man. I love playing golf with my brother. Okay. My brother's a great guy to play golf with. Dream foursome. I mean, it'd be great to play with Scottie Scheffler right now. That'd be fun.
Right. Love it.
Watch him tear it up. And then man, I don't know. I mean, Tiger Woods in his prime, but I feel like everyone's going to say that.
But if it's who you want to play with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that would be amazing just from watching it, but from pure enjoyment, my brother and I played with two of our buddies that played golf at ORU, and we played golf at Golf Club of Oklahoma together on, you know, 3-4 days a week. And those are some of the most fun rounds of golf I've ever had. So me and my brother, Blake Broerman and Spencer Sheet.
Okay. I remember Spencer. He played Earl Roberts. I remember him.
Yep. Yep.
Was he from Colorado?
He is. He's from Denver.
Denver. That's what I
went to high school with Wyndham, actually.
He did. That's what I remember.
And Christian McCaffrey.
That's correct. Christian McCaffrey was there. That school, Valor Christian, produced some pretty good athletes.
Yeah.
Well, Carson, I appreciate you taking me down memory lane. I've been wanting to get you on here for a while, and I thank you for all the things you said about CGF. I'm a big supporter and love that ministry, and I hope you're with them for a long, long time. But thanks for taking the time out today. It's been great.
Yeah, Coach, thanks for having me. And seriously, thank you. Thank you for everything over the years.
Absolutely. You bet. Yeah. Have a good spring, okay?
Thank you. You too.